You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Peter Husey, the president of Geostrategic Analysis and the head of strategic studies at the Mitchell Institute. He is one of the go-to guys, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to thinking about and helping the rest of us understand the challenges to our nuclear deterrent posture and what it will take to overcome them. Peter Husey, welcome back. It's so good to have you.
Nice to talk to you, Frank.
We were speaking in the previous segment with Peter Pry about some of the threats that have been emerging from North Korea of late, Peter, specifically with respect to electromagnetic pulse attacks. And I wanted to just to get your sense. You've written recently at the Gatestone Institute about the necessity of being clear-eyed about our enemies as they are, not as we would wish them to be. How are we doing in that regard at the moment, not just with respect to North Korea, but for that matter, Iran, Russia, China?
Well, I think, Frank, the reason there is angst within the conventional wisdom folks on Iran, North Korea, China, and Russia is that you have an administration that, in fact, sees countries as they are, and their strategy and rhetoric has been commensurate with that concern. And that's what's caused people to go get, as General Powell once said, they all have a case of the vapors. I think in every one of those instances, the administration, having been handed a pretty bad state of the world, has been all moving in the right direction. As you know, no administration moves as fast as we want or as fast often as the bad guys operate, but I think they're doing the right job. I think there's something that is in the news that we ought all to look at very seriously. Mr. Putin was interviewed and said that he met with Kim's father in North Korea in the summer of 2000 when he was told the North Koreans had nuclear weapons, and that he said this publicly. He said this in video now, and it's on the record. And this was exactly the time when Madeleine Albright was traveling to North Korea and Bill Clinton had reduced sanctions on North Korea to encourage them to invite our Secretary of State. What does that tell you? It tells you that the North Koreans were cheating on the deal, that the Russians knew they were cheating on the agreed framework, and our administration was busy conceding and making eliminating some of the sanctions in order to make more deals with the Secretary of State there. I think it was Bill Clinton was going to go and do a summit or something in North Korea.
Peter, this raises the concern that we may be doing pretty much the same thing at the moment with respect to North Korea's strategic ally, Iran. Talk a little bit about that. We're going to be discussing it further with Fred Flight shortly, but I'm interested in your take on it.
Well, as you know, I signed the letter that John Bolton put together saying I think we should get out of the deal altogether. If it's submitted to the Senate as a proposal to decertify, and then the Senate would reimpose sanctions, my hope is the Senate would have a debate on the Iran deal and say, do we want to continue this deal, sanctions or no sanctions? And my hope is that you have enough votes in the Senate to say, this deal is not only inadequate with respect to the nuclear program in Iran, it's totally inadequate for all the other things it doesn't talk about, which are human rights, missiles, ballistic missile development, conventional modernization, and Iran's huge panoply of terror groups that they support, give sanctuary to, finance, and arm. When you have the Houthis in Yemen throwing ballistic missiles at targets all over Saudi Arabia, and then you have people writing in some of the blogs in Washington about that it's a myth that Iran is helping the Houthis. The question is, where is the ballistic missile factories in Yemen that are building these rockets? And the blindness here, remember Andy McCarthy wrote a book called Willful Blindness about the lack of understanding terrorism we were facing. And then Condi Rice said they were at war with us, but we didn't figure that out. Well, what do you think Iran's been doing since 1979? The military says they've killed 500 Americans with IEDs in Iraq. We know they were responsible for Khobar Towers and the Beirut bombing and also 9/11. In part, they were training the hijackers.
But Peter, let me bring you back to the point you were making earlier, and that is these rogue states, for want of a better term, have made very little secret of the fact that they hold agreements with nations like us in contempt. They make them and break them routinely. Are there specific lessons from the experience of the Clinton administration, and for that matter, Republican administrations as well with the North Koreans, and the present undertaking, the debate that we're having now. The president may, in the aftermath of this show's recording, announce what he's going to do about this so-called joint comprehensive plan of action. Should we be under any illusion that the Iranians are cheating and will, of course, persist in building nuclear weapons capabilities with which to act on those threats to bring death to America?
We shouldn't be under an illusion. I think the problem we face, Frank, is that the proponents of the deal say that the alternative is war. And when Reagan became president, as you know, I'm working on a project called the Reagan Legacy Project to look at the lessons of the Cold War, which was what my Gatestone Institute essay was about. Reagan came in and did regime change and all over Eastern Europe. All those communist countries became what? Relatively free. And he did it with a whole panoply of financial sanctions on trade issues, on military capability, going after these wars of national liberation, doing the strategic and conventional modernization, helping NATO and the INF missile deployments. As you know, we did everything from A to Z. And what you have in Washington is, as soon as someone says, well, we'll talk with North Korea. And the question is, okay, about what? To what end? What are they bringing to the table? Because they've said we're not going to talk about our nukes, so what are we talking about? When you say military options aren't available, you tell the North Koreans, don't worry, there's no military option that makes any sense, so you're free to basically do what you want to do. And my view is, get serious. Stop playing this wink game of pretending like strategic patience or leading from behind or soft power or reset or smart power. This administration knows this. But we should have no illusions that these people are, you know, as someone wrote recently, as Frank Miller wrote, signing a piece of paper doesn't work with these people because they cheat and lie and steal on everything they sign.
I understood. Let me ask you, Peter, as a serious expert on our nuclear deterrent, to talk for a minute about its condition. There was this fake news story out of NBC that the president had decided he wanted to essentially magnify by 10 times the number of nuclear weapons that we had. He's you know, repudiated that, as his General Mattis. What could we be doing? What should we be doing, as you see it, in terms of enhancing our strategic deterrent, given the condition it's in at the moment?
Well, my view is that the current plan that's on the table that the Senate and House have approved, if you want to accelerate it, I think we should. But we have a bomber now ready under contract. We have two companies that have been selected to do risk reduction for Minuteman and a new ground-based ICBM. And we have the submarine Columbia classes already under contract and going to be rebuilt. We need to do command and control and communication. That's critical. That's part of it. And the warheads in terms of the National Nuclear Strategic Administration, Security Administration, that's part of the mix. We're talking about $28 billion now, probably going up to $36 billion at its peak. And over a period of 30 years, we're going to be spending somewhere around $750 billion. But compare that $30 billion you're going to spend on nukes to a defense budget of close between $650 and $700 billion and a national budget of between $4 and $5.5 trillion over the next 10 years.
It's small and it's absolutely necessary, I think, is the bottom line.
Without which, as Mattis says, you're dead. You don't have the top cover to make sure that crises don't become conflicts and conventional conflicts don't end up with nuclear warheads running around. You know, for 70 years, nuclear warheads have never been used since the end of World War II, and that is because America's been strong, not because America decided to be weak.
Amen. Peter Husey, we have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for your time today, as always, and for the great work you're doing at Geostrategic Analysis and at the Mitchell Institute. Come back to us again, if you would, very soon. Next up, we'll talk with Fred Flights about some of these Iran capers, specifically the next steps on this so-called Obama bomb deal. That and more straight ahead.